You are listening to Congregation Bethel of Manhattan, a two testament conservative style synagogue, serving Manhattan since 1993. Visit us on the web at bethelnyc.org.
It's Parsha Pinchas, which is Numbers 25:10 through 30, verse 1. And the very uplifting Devar title is Waiting to Die. Aren't you glad you came in the heat today? Actually, it'll prove probably different than what it sounds. At least we'll hope so. So, one of the advantages of doing the sermon is that you really read through the entire parasha. And this was one of those parashas. And I was like, oh, Parsha Pinchas. That's, you know, the one where the guy drives the spear through the other guy. And no, that happened right before this parasha. It just starts out with the word Pinchas. So no, none of that action, none of that like action-adventure hero stuff. This starts out with the census, you know. And although I was thinking about it, and I was thinking, you know what? God was, you know, he's God, and he's very intelligent because Pinchas, you know, the Levites and that eternal covenant, it's very good that he didn't make that the eternal example of what God followers should be. Otherwise, we would be Hamas rather than the people fighting against them because Levites aren't supposed to touch dead bodies or even go through graveyards. So it's good. He said, okay, that one time that was all right. Now you guys never touch blood again. So that occurred to me. If I was the parasha before, that would be your sermon. Now you get waiting to die. Sorry. Anyways. But as I was saying, the advantage of going through the whole parasha is that you read every word, or I guess you should. And this one was a census, and it was really, really detailed. And it was so-and-so, son of so-and-so. And because right after this, they're going to go into the land finally and divvy up all the plots of land. So they have to be very, very detailed. But it also had a very odd quality, this census. Because not only did they tell you who was who, but they also listed all this shameful stuff. You know, it was so-and-so, and they were the surviving sons of Korach. And these were the guys who were consumed by plague. Remember them? And yeah, these were the people who were the descendants of the people who were consumed by fire. And it was just like, wow. It's a lot of really hard things to remember. And right before this, you had this incident with Pinchas. And then it skips ahead, like almost 40 years to entering in the promised land. And all these guys are dead that have been around that were the wilderness generation. And something also told me when I read the final number to think back to Egypt. I wondered how many people had left Egypt and how many people were going to now go into the promised land to fight. And I thought, wow, it's been 40 years. You know, I wonder how many people have they gained along the way. And in Numbers 1:45 through 46, it said, when Israel left Egypt, it was the same principle, men over 20 who could fight, they had 603,550. So 40 years later, 601,730. 40 years earlier, 603,550. So you actually had a negative population growth in terms of soldiers. And that was sort of shocking, and I was wondering, what must have that been like? And why did you have that? And it was because this literally was a doomed generation. And I was, you know, the actor in me was kind of visualizing what must have been like to travel with these people. Because you've got this younger group, and they're just waiting for their parents to die off. And the older generation has done everything wrong. They tried to make it right. They said, "Oh, okay, do over. You know, we'll go in now." And then, you know, they got totally tromped and didn't work at all in their own power. And now they're just wandering around for 40 years. And there's no hope for them. But they also have no reason to keep going except keeping their progeny alive. So these must have been some really, really scary people. Like, could you imagine wandering into the Hebrews? Canaan's 11 days that way. And they're wandering 40 years in this area that looks like Mars. These are some angry, I don't know if you've seen Dune, but like the Fremen, you know, they've got nothing on the Hebrews, I'm thinking. And the guys, the younger people who are before them, they are raised on this radical trust and hope. Their whole lives, they wake up, there's manna. They follow a pillar of cloud and, a column of fire. They're in a desert, and yet they find water miraculously. So they know that there's a God to both fear, because they've seen the example of their families that didn't fear God, and there's a God that they can trust. It also made me look at, at Bethel, we often talk about Deuteronomy 8:4. We kind of use it as something like to encourage ourselves. Your clothing did not wear out on you, nor did your foot swell these 40 years. And I thought of it from the reverse angle. Like, that's really not maybe such a great thing. These guys were just holding the clothes for the younger generation so that they could wear them, get to Canaan and fight. I mean, the reason, it was almost the exact same number of people. So the miracle was, yes, your weapons, your clothing, it didn't wear out so that God could return with the same people, the same numbers that he left with. Because it wasn't going to be, oh, we wandered around for 40 years so we could build our numbers and then we could take the promised land. God was again showing not by might, but by my glory. So there was kind of a back edge to that miracle too. That, you ever heard the expression, he's an empty suit? This doomed generation, they were empty suits. They were waiting to pass on all they had to the next generation. But the next generation, they learned fear and trust in a way that probably no one has learned since the time of the plagues in Egypt. And I was wondering about that too. The people that have been giving sermons while the rabbi's been away on sabbaticals, it is ridiculous. It's been humbling to see the foibles of our ancestors complaining and complaining and complaining. And I think part of it is that we didn't experience the plagues. We got out of it. We got to watch the Egyptians suffer through the wrath of God, but we were okay here in the land of, the Hebrews, Gershon, and we didn't get to feel how powerful God was until we were out in the desert and that wrath fell upon us. I don't think the Egyptians would be speaking like that if they were out walking in the desert with God. And I wonder, it says there was a mixed multitude that some Egyptians left because they had seen how empty the Egyptian gods were. It never says an Egyptian was, sitting in, the entrance to their tent grumbling. You ever wonder why that is? I think it's probably because, they knew what God could do. And they were just, duck and cover. And that was probably it. But the rabbis of and the sages of Israel, they talk about two concepts, and they have a very poetic way of putting it. They say, these are the wings upon which we fly to God. And it's kind of a nice concept, but there's real teeth to it, too. They say it's Yirat Adonai, which is the fear of God or the awe of God, and Ahavat Adonai, which is the love of God. And I think that's what the younger generation was able to get out of this experience, and what we can try to learn too, that at the same time they saw what had happened when you don't trust God, when you go against God, but they also saw how much God protected them and took care of them. And even for their family, who had really messed up, it's not like God just, you know, said, okay, boom, with his big thumb and squished them. And, you know, and that was that. He still took care of them all those 40 years. He still fed them. And they still had a home with him. And until the last one of them was gone, they were under his protection and under his care. And it's really kind of like a parent. You know, he knew that he couldn't take them where they wanted to go, but he loved them anyways, and he was waiting for the children that he knew he could take. And yet you always saw this failure in front of you as well. And it must have been so hard. And I know we can relate to that, right? You know, as believers too, especially if you're, you know, a first-generation believer, you love your family, but it's so tough because you want to share with them what God has taught you. And yet, it's just alien to them. And you can see them stumbling and hurting each other and having pain. And you know that you're not much better. You're doing the same thing, except God's just happening to save you at the same time. But there's just that element missing. But I also, you know, I'm a martial artist, so again, I thought of like all the battles. That's another reason there might have been negative population growth, is that there might have been a lot of killing going on. You know, either they're just really depressed and nobody's making babies anymore, so there's no population growth. They say, what's the point? And, you know, or something to do with what God did that we don't know about, that's not written about, or it's written in one of those books we've lost. Or, you know, they're just fighting a lot. Certainly there's a whole lot of angry people within 11 days of them who we know, you know, went out to fight them before. And they seem to be very angry people at this point. And so they were, but they kind of must have been the ultimate warriors at that point. And that must have been passed on to their children too. And it brought to mind this passage that I had read from the Hagakure, which is it's the book of the samurai that was written in 1716. And it says, the way of the samurai is found in death. Meditation on inevitable death should be performed daily. Every day, when one's body and mind are at peace, one should meditate upon being ripped apart by arrows, rifles, spears, and swords, being carried away by surging waves, being thrown into the midst of a great fire, being struck by lightning, being shaken to death by a great earthquake, falling from 1,000-foot cliffs, dying of disease, or committing seppuku at the death of one's master. And every day, without fail, one should consider himself as dead. This is the substance of the way of the samurai. Yes, that's a great advertisement for being a samurai. That they really didn't include that in the Last Samurai movie with Tom Cruise, did they? But these guys in the desert, the doomed generation, this is really how they were living. I mean, one, they had seen all this really happen to their people, and two, they knew there was no hope for them to get in. So they must have had this kind of mindset and really this kind of ferocity in battle. So all of this wandering, though, it had a purpose. The generation who could not enter was whittled away, and the young, they weren't slaves. They grew into these warriors who feared God more than anything they might encounter in Canaan. And they trusted the Lord more than their own parents, who had doomed them to a life just out of reach from what had been promised. Tolkien said in The Lord of the Rings, "All who wander are not lost." And I think that was very much an idea that was going on and living for this generation. So how do we apply this to ourselves? So God forbid we find ourselves as the doomed generation that's just an empty suit. And even if our clothes are not wearing out and, you know, we're a placeholder in history, that's not what we want to be. But we also have something that they didn't have. We have the Messiah who cleansed away our sin. So we're in a very different situation. But on the other hand, it's complex, because I was thinking that this is very weird, but you read about how God treats us post-Messiah, and it talks about this strange, we die with the Messiah and we rise with the Messiah. And we have this simultaneous death and new life going on at the same time. So you read in Romans 6:8, "Now if we have died with Messiah, we believe that we also live with him." And Philippians 1:21, for to me to live is Messiah, and to die is gain." That sounds a little bit like the Hagakure there, you know. It's sanctification. And it puts us in this strange state where we're both living this new life and dying to our old life at the same time. And Rabbi Bruce, this is for you. I'm going to pull in a little quantum physics, because he'd really like that. So the only thing that I've seen that's like this is in science. There's a state called superposition, and it comes from Schrodinger's cat. Has anyone heard of this experiment? So only a German could think this through as a thought experiment. So the idea is that you take a cat you must really not like, and you put it in a box with a cyanide capsule, and there is a radioactive element, isotope, that decays at an unsteady rate. So you never know when it's going to decay. But if it decays, it releases a hammer that breaks the cyanide that kills the cat. But while the cat is in the box, and you don't know whether the isotope has set off radiation, the cat is both simultaneously alive and dead at the same time. It has this superposition where scientifically, mathematically, the cat is alive and dead at the same time. And until you open the box, it is in that state. And we as believers are sort of in that state too. So congratulations. You are, I guess, the living dead. I don't know. I wasn't planning to say that in my sermon, but it was in the sermon notes. But while you're being sanctified, you are dying to self and living in Messiah. And so am I. So we get to play both parts wandering in the wilderness. We get to see the part of ourselves that failed, and the part of ourselves that's not worthy to enter the promised land, that is far from redemption, that we can learn from. And we also are able to live the story of redemption, where we can more fully and more embrace the part of ourselves that lives with Messiah and really lets Messiah live through us, where we can become the kind of people that can be worthy of entering the promised land, where we're tough enough to face the giants that we've been struggling with. So I was thinking about this, and I was thinking, besides mourning poor Schrodinger's cat and wondering why he hated cats so much, I was thinking, how do we go more towards one direction or the other? And how do we know if we are wandering? And I think that there's a big lesson in just the fact that the Hebrews were only 11 days from the Promised Land, and they were just walking around in circles. And I don't know if there's anything in your life that it seems like you really should have gotten by now, but I know there are things in my life that are that way. And I think that's one of the things that God points to, where, you know, this is, you know, something you know, it's within reach, right? Yeshua says, you know, Malchut HaShemayim Al Yad, the kingdom of heavens, it's at hand. It's so close you could just grasp it. You know, in Israel, when someone says, you know, something's Al Yad, they're like, pick it up, it's right next to you. Come on. It's right there. It's in your hand. It's right there. And yet it's very hard to reach the kingdom of heaven in a lot of ways, right? I mean, you know, the path is narrow and few will walk it. So I've been taking time thinking about what is my wilderness that I'm wandering through? And what are the things that seem like they should be so close? They're within reach. What's the 11-day journey that I've been walking 40 years to get to? Now, I'm not quite 40, so I can't say I've been walking 40 years, but there's things that feel like it's been 40 years trying to reach. And I think that is one of the things to learn from the foibles of our ancestors, that there are things that we need to focus on that they seem like they should be right there in front of us, that it's at hand. We should be able to grab it, and yet it's taking so long for us to get it that there's something on a spiritual level, just like what happened to our ancestors, that's blocking us. But we don't have to wait the 40 years to die off, because we already have died with Messiah, and we are living a new life. So when we find ourselves in that situation, we need to embrace that new life more. So what is it we can embrace more in new life to get to that goal? What is it that we have to lay down our old self, our old life more to achieve? And there's a few things that definitely come to mind for me. I'm sure if you think on it, there'll be some for you. And I think you have to come at it as a samurai of the spirit, that you have to come at it with the same warrior ferocity that our Hebrew ancestors came at conquering the land. I love the scene where, you know, Joshua and Caleb, they're the only ones that from the preceding generation that make it to the promised land, because they're the only ones that didn't complain and they said, yes, with God we can do this. And so Caleb's, you know, an old man, and he gets there and, you know, he's thinking, you know, people are divvying up parcels of land, and he's pretty old by this time, and he's not going to be a farmer. Like I said, these are like the Fremen warriors of the wilderness, and he's not going to live this quiet life of retirement. And, you know, in Joshua 14:12, he's looking around at the promised land, and he looks up and he says, so now give me this hill country of which the Lord spoke on that day 40 years ago. For you heard on that day that the Anakim were there. The Anakim are literally the descendants of giants. And when we say giants, like, they literally were giants. They weren't, like, figuratively giants. They thought they were real giants. I don't know how tall people were at that time. I've seen, you know, some Egyptian mummies. They were pretty short, but, you know, basketball players would be giants to them. But, you know, maybe these people were, you know, that size. And they have great fortified cities. It may be that the Lord will be with me, and I shall drive them out, just as the Lord said. Not, it definitely will be. Maybe. I've wandered for 40 years. Let me go fight the giants in the fortified cities. Maybe God will be with me. That's it. That's pretty fierce. I hope, you know, when I'm 90, that, you know, that's my attitude. You know, not that I'm, like, retiring to Florida, but, you know, yeah, give me the biker gang over there. I'll take them on. Maybe God will be with me. Now, all of this is not so easy to sort of swallow, I'm sure. You know, thinking about, it wasn't for me anyways, as I was thinking about it early this morning, I was thinking about all these areas of my life where, wow, you know, what should have been an 11-day journey that's, you know, taking 40 years. And I'm just going to put this over here for right now. I'm sure you won't mind. And Yeshua, you know, he said, his followers, at one point in, having trouble seeing my outline because I took off my glasses, excuse me. I used them as a prop. I should not have done that. His followers said, this is a hard saying. Who can listen to it? And then they walked away. So I hope we're not, you know, the same kind of people that, you know, if anything's tough, you know, we won't be like Caleb. We'll just say, you know, because I think that's what keeps people wandering for 40 years. And that's what I think was wrong with our people originally. Why they weren't getting that complaining equals death, plague, being burned by fire, you know, having what we want, but having it, you know, in a terrible way. Like, we want meat. Okay, you'll have meat till it's coming out of your nose. I don't know what that means, but it really doesn't sound pleasant. I've seen my kids, you know, spit Cheerios through their nose. I can't even imagine what meat through your nose would feel like. You know, it really, yeah, not going to be very, very fun. But to succeed in reaching whatever promised land the Lord has for us, our congregation, our city, we need to face our own spiritual death, like the samurai of the soul. And this is how the scriptures tell us we can rise to greater spiritual life. And this was very strange to me when I first came across this passage in Matthew 11, 12. Because just because the kingdom of heaven is close at hand, it's al-yad, doesn't mean we don't have to fight to obtain it. It says, from the days of Yochanan the Immerser until now, the kingdom of heaven has suffered violence, and the violent take it by force. We have to fight for it. So may there be more of him and less of us on the day of battle. And until then, may God give us some of the blessings he gave our ancestors. May our clothing not wear out on us. May our feet not swell. May our children continue to think of us as superheroes for as long as possible. The other new parents know what I mean, and they're smirking to themselves. And may he sustain us while we're on our journey and help our resources last as long as they can. And may he help us go little by little, strength to strength, until we're ready to face the giants. Amen? Amen.
Shalom, and thanks for listening. Before we sign off, may we ask you to consider these thoughts also? For 20 years, Bethel has been serving in Manhattan, one of the most financially challenging places in the entire world. If you enjoy and feel nourished by these podcasts, we invite you to partner with us by making a generous one-time or repeating gift through our website, www.bethelnyc.org. It is so very easy to do, and every gift means so much towards reaching and teaching the Jewish population of Manhattan about Yeshua, our Messiah, as well as providing faith community life for those who come to believe. Thank you for whatever you can do, and we hope our podcast continue to be helpful to you. Shalom.